listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Evidence is mounting that there is intelligent life in our universe other than that found here on Earth. Our government, by way of the National Security Agency, has released documents showing that work is underway to decipher messages from outer space. And many reputable people have reported so-called alien abductions. And from Pescara, Italy, Professor Stefano Brecci documented and reported a 30-year friendship between a group of aliens and a group of Italians. Well, if you met an alien, how would you communicate? This is the basis of our show today, as I talk with Nancy Duterte about how to talk to an alien. So welcome to Full Power Living, where we're dedicated to awakening the world to the power and importance of human emotions. And if you're listening to us on emotionalpro.com's radio show page or blogtalkradio.com/FPL, please join us on our chat. Know also that you can get a subscription to Full Power Living on iTunes. Well, our guest is known as the Skeptical Psychic. Nancy Duterte is a securities litigation attorney who became a trained psychic detective and a remote viewer trained in military CRV methods. She's a magna cum laude graduate of Princeton University, a frequent media guest on shows like Coast to Coast AM. She also hosted her own weekly CBS radio show. She's certified in intuitive gestalt psychotherapy, and she's the author of several books, including Psychic Intuition, Everything You Ever Wanted to Ask But Were Afraid to Know, which we talked about with her 4 years ago, and the one we're discussing today, How to Talk with an Alien. You can find Nancy on the web at theskepticpsychic.com and at talkalien.com. So, Nancy Duterte, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you so much, Eileen.
Our media and entertainment industries often portray aliens as frightening and sinister creatures of whom we should be afraid. And there are so many creation myths that involve supernatural or larger-than-life beings showing up here on the Earth and intermingling with humans that I just want you to know that I've often thought we likely are all aliens or part aliens ourselves. So I thought we'd start by having you outline how we can entertain the notion of encountering an alien in the first place.
Ooh, well, you've got me going in about 10 different directions there. okay, so first of all, I would say that, I have certainly thought about the idea of all of us being part alien or some of us being part alien. And to me, having, you know, researched this field for a while now, that concept based on what I've looked at doesn't seem as crazy or as unusual as I certainly thought it was when I first started this. There's sort of a learning curve in this whole field, and I'm no expert in that. I know that there's some books out recently. I think Nick Redfern did a book recently on, you know, bloodlines and that kind of thing. So it's possible. In terms of encountering aliens or hybrids or whatever, some, I believe, do actually look just like us, sound like us. They may not be like us internally or intellectually, emotionally, or spiritually, but they can assume a physical appearance that's similar to us, so I think it'd be hard to tell. Then there are others, of course, that I think don't look anything like us and are truly alien, you know, in the truest sense of the word. And depending on the anatomical equipment for speech, you know, audible speech that all of these different species have, that sort of determines whether or not we're going to be able to have a conversation like we're having right now, or whether it's going to be conducted on a different level. And I believe there are many different levels of communication because language is just a subset. How would you be able to initiate a discussion? I mean, that's sort of why I wrote this book, How to Talk to an Alien, because it seemed to me that there's so many, I have read so many cases of abductions and contact experiences where the human involved either is so stunned by the experience or they're put into sort of a trance-like state that they it doesn't occur to them to ask questions. That's the first thing. And sometimes when they do try to ask very simple questions, some of these species are incredibly resistant to giving any type of a true response or engaging in a true dialogue. So I think that what we have to do as humans, even though, you know, this, I think in many respects, a lot of people are not ready for this, but we have to start thinking about how to initiate the dialogues, because there are too many contact situations, there are too many documented cases of different types of interference with our military and commercial enterprises, with, you know, people being abducted, used as guinea pigs, or any number of other things, that it's very, very important that we learn how to initiate the contact, how to ask questions, and how to interpret responses. And the only way you can do that is by learning language to start with, whatever that language is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, what my whole thing is all about.
I really relate to that. When I was about 10 years old, my family, it was a military family, we moved to Germany, and we lived with a family that had a daughter my age, and so I ended up going out on the streets and riding the buses and going to shop for food and various things, and it was really important for me to know the language and to be able to also understand how people worked. For example, one time I was sitting on the bus with my friend and an older woman walked up to me and pointed her finger up in the air, and I started looking all around the bus. What she was doing was telling me that I was a child and I should stand up for her, but I couldn't interpret it, you know?
Right. Uh-huh.
So I really relate to that. And also, as I was reading your book, the idea that instead of perhaps being frightened, we might be like we're going to another country and get interested and get curious and want to know about who it is we're communicating with.
I think that's really important, because if, you know, it's just a standard human response, if you're frightened, you are going to react probably quickly and without too much consideration and with violence. That's just how people operate. That's how our militaries operate. When you're afraid, you either go on defense or offense, but you're in a certain mode which prevents a discussion or a negotiation or a communication.
Right.
So I think that's key.
Mm-hmm. Well, before I read your book, I had never even heard about Professor Stefano Brecci. Is it Brecci's or Breccia's?
You know, I don't know. I call him Breccia, but I'm probably wrong.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll call him Breccia, just in honor of you. but he, in a book, documented and reported a 30-year friendship between a group of aliens and a group of Italians in the area of Pescara, Italy. And I was fascinated to realize that those aliens were not surface of the Earth, but they weren't from another planet either. They were from under the Earth. So I know you go into this in the book, but there are different groups of aliens. Aliens come from different places. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, and I think that in the UFO world, a lot of people, you know, the common belief is, and I think it's because it just gets repeated so many times, or maybe it's because people have experiences, I don't know. But the common belief is that most aliens have to come from another star system or another galaxy. I think some do, some don't. Some come within our solar system. I think also another common belief is that if they are living under the Earth, then they must therefore be of the reptilian type of aliens. And I think as the W56 friendship in, case in Italy shows, that's not true at all. I mean, or if it is, it's only partially true, because you have all different types of groups living in these interesting, I don't know what you'd call them, bases or stations underground. I've also heard reports in Brazil that there are alien underground groups, and you can access them in very, very remote areas in the jungles through, and this sounds like something out of, you know, either, you know, science fiction or some type of, you know, James Bond type movie, but you access them through elevators going deep down into the, into the earth. So I, and then, of course, you have your interdimensional and time traveler, and those are two slightly different issues. You have alien groups that I believe are coming to us in from all different locations. Some of them are using Earth as a stopover, apparently, on their way to other places, and some of them, this is a destination. Some of them are using this as a vacation playland. I've heard that one, too. And that they actually have problems because they don't generally deal in money, and they don't show up with money. So how do you operate on our Earth without money?
Well, there are a lot of people trying that these days, unfortunately. Well, you know, you bring up an interesting thing I was going to ask you about. About 30 years ago, I went to a workshop on dreams, and I reported to the leaders that at one time in my life, I remembered my dreams well, but for several years, I didn't recall dreaming at all, and I still don't.
Really?
And I was told that as I sleep here in on the Earth, I'm actually doing high-level diplomatic work in another dimension. And because that requires secrecy, I don't recall those experiences when I come back to consciousness. Now, I don't have a way to prove or disprove that, but the behavior has you know, continued, and I found, you know, thinking about what you're writing about, I went, wait a minute, that means I'm an alien, because I apparently go other places and do things. And so there is interdimensional travel, and some people even here do it. So not only do aliens come to us, but we go to other places and are aliens there, just like an expatriate.
And again, you've got me going about now about 20 different directions. I always used to think, because I've always been a lucid dreamer, and I have a pretty, even though my memory for normal things like names and faces during daytime hours is, strangely, no, I happen to be really good with numbers.
Oh, good.
but you know, any names and faces, terrible. But I have an excellent recollection for dreams. I always have. And my husband claims he doesn't dream at all. And I've read all the studies, and yes, everybody dreams. Okay, so then what's happening if you feel you're not dreaming? Is that simply a lack of memory, or are you going someplace? Now, I've been told that under anesthesia, where, of course, I didn't have any recollection at the time, although I've been working on that one recently, I can now have a little bit of memory from being under anesthesia. But at that point, I didn't. I was told that I had shown up at my friend's home across the country and was standing in her bedroom, and was all I was all ticked off about something. And I was complaining, and I was saying a couple of things in French. And apparently, not only did she see me, she heard me, but her husband also saw me. I did this twice. So, and I have no And by the way, what she reported back that I had said, it was all accurate, and she didn't know me at the time. Or we'd only met once, I think, for a lunch. So you can be places and not have a memory during your waking hours. I do believe that. Whether you're out there doing diplomatic work, that wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, my vibe on you is that you are extremely diplomatic, and that you have certain insights into people and knowing, you know, it's like, you know, horses that are tuned to being tugged, you know, if you yank them too hard on their bits, you get like those horses that just, they don't pay much attention, but it's almost like you have an ability to just lightly touch and you get people to move where you want them to move. So that wouldn't surprise me.
Ah, well, that's an interesting piece of feedback. Well, I mentioned before that my family lived in Germany and France when I was young. That was in the 1950s. And we returned and we went to this rural school in Georgia. And my sister and I became sort of like mini celebrities, because at that time people didn't go to places like Germany or France very much.
Right.
And so I remember going into a class. We were invited to come in and talk about our experience. And I went into a class and one boy looked up and said to me, "Speak German." And in your book, How to Talk to an Alien, you lay out some of the problems we might have in trying to speak alien, like knowing the language, understanding how they communicate, having them know our language, and also emotions. So I want to ask you to talk to me a little bit about some of the issues in speaking alien or communicating alien.
The biggest issue, and by the way, having it sort of worked my way backwards on this, I decided that if you're going to look at just audible speech and audible language, then you have to start looking at, you know, do they have the physiology, the anatomy to be able to speak? And I think some do, some don't. So, and if you're looking at that, you got to look at, well, how many different species of aliens are there? And I have, I don't think anybody knows the answer to that. And I think we're being increasingly visited by more, at least it's more and more coming to light. I've heard estimates anywhere between 4 to, you know, 82 to 160. Recently, I think I read something, it was up in the 300 range. But assuming you have that many different types of aliens, presumably you also have that, you know, at least that many different types of languages. And from the reports that I have taken a look at, some of them sound like bees buzzing. Some of them sound like birds, like specifically Western meadowlarks. Those would be the tall whites reported by Charles Hall in Nevada. You have some that sound like yelping dogs. So if you're hearing those noises, I mean, think about how we deal with animal noises. You know, birds, dogs, bees. We don't understand any of them. In fact, we're fairly stupid, I think, when it comes to that. We don't spend too much time thinking, they couldn't be communicating. I mean, because we assume that they just have smaller brains and we're the superior species, and therefore it doesn't matter. But the point is, if you're the people who are studying animal languages or bird communication have found actually that they're quite complex.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to understand when they're making the certain sounds, in what context are they making those sounds? Are they, you know, clicking because they're delighted they're about to get food? Are they clicking because they're sounding an alarm because there's a threat of a predator? I mean, you have to be able to take the language and understand when it keeps repeating itself in a context. And that's the problem we have with aliens. Because for most people, they don't show up that often. Or if they do, it's irregular, and we don't get that repetition sense that we would normally get
mm-hmm.
with a language, which makes it tough. So what I have proposed in my book, How to Talk to an Alien, is that we do what I call like a form of triangulation, which is similar to what a lot of these UFO groups do when they go out and try and gather evidence of the UFO craft. You know, they may get photos, but in order to confirm it, you want to get photos from three different locations, and that way you can pinpoint where the craft was in the sky. And you could do the same thing with language, which is what the Rosetta Stone did. We were able to figure out the meaning of Egyptian hieroglyphics because we had the exact same government edict that was written also in Greek and Egyptian demotic script.
Ah.
So we kind of pieced it together and said, well, if that means that over there and there, well, then that must mean that here. And we could do the same thing with alien languages.
Wow. That's very fascinating. We're up to our first break, Nancy. My guest today is Nancy Duterte, who's an attorney, a trained remote viewer, a skeptical psychic, and an author, and we're talking about how to talk to an alien. And coming up, we're going to talk about whether aliens have emotions. So hurry on back here to Full Power Living.
Eileen Dillon is a certified senior life mentor with Accessing Universal Intelligence. She's available to conduct mentoring sessions with you to help you understand, change, and evolve using the advice of your own higher self. You can be anywhere in the world. Sessions are conducted through Skype. For more information about these life mentoring sessions, fees, and how to register, go to www.emotionalpro.com and click on the mentoring link at the top. Get personally tailored assistance with your toughest life questions. Visit mentoring@emotionalpro.com today.
Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. Please sign up now at emotionalpro.com to be on our mailing list. We'd like to send you our biweekly newsletter telling you about our upcoming programs. Next week, my guest is a very unique individual, Tom Bird, who writes and teaches about how our words and writing help us connect with our divine purpose, especially if you've ever felt you had a book inside of you yearning to be written. I want you to listen next week when I talk with Tom about how writing that book can help you connect with all that is. That's 9 a.m. Pacific time on Thursday, January 14th, right here in our new year of 2016. And thank you also for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through understanding the importance, mastery, and power of human emotions. While you're on the Emotional Pro homepage, you can get a copy of my free list of the signals of 7 everyday emotions, and that will help you immediately to move toward mastery over the emotions that come up in your life. I'm talking today with Nancy Duterte, who's author of several books, including the one we're discussing today, How to Talk to an Alien. But Nancy, before we get back into alien work, you're a trained remote viewer, and somebody has told me a little bit about remote viewing, but for our audience here, what is a remote viewer, how does it work, and how in the heck did you get into that whole field?
Well, my one of my mentors going back a ways was Ingo Swann. I really didn't intend him to be a mentor, and I'm sure he didn't intend to be one either. But he's sort of known as the father of remote viewing. He created it for the CIA, uh-huh. along with some physicists out at the Stanford Research Institute. And it was funded for about, roughly 20 years before it was defunded and then basically privatized.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still people, there are plenty of remote viewers out there, and I think it's probably part of certain military training programs that continue on today. It's simply, you know, I spoke with a psychic years and years ago at the Edgar Cayce Institute down in Virginia Beach, and she said, you know, I think if anything is going to legitimize psychic work, it's going to be remote viewing.
Mm-hmm.
Because men get it. Now, men get it because, in my view, the way that I describe remote viewing, it's nothing but clairvoyance with protocols.
Ah.
So if you're already clairvoyant, it's uh-huh. not really going to teach you anything new. It's going to teach you new methods. It's going to teach you different ways to methodically access your innate clairvoyant abilities. And what it also does, the reason why it's so appealing, I think, to men in particular, is because it has these protocols that allows you to know in advance how clean the obtaining the information was. In other words, you weren't given any clues or you weren't front-ended with information. You didn't get feedback while you were doing it. It's all very, very clean, and there are ways to score and judge your answers. And that becomes a tool, which is why mm-hmm. it became a tool in the military.
Mm-hmm. And the process is, or what you're actually doing is like sitting still and either seeing things or answering questions about things that are at a distance from you that you would have otherwise no way of knowing anything about. Is that correct?
Normally, all you get is a pair of coordinates. And uh-huh. when they first started the program, you just got a pair of, they started out being geographical coordinates because they wanted you to basically see if you could see what was happening over with, you know, some military or industrial facility that was halfway across the planet. And then they realized that they didn't have to use actual real coordinates. All they have to do is give you a number. And so the number now, that's all you get. And you sit there with a piece of paper and a pencil, and you follow the steps for basically free associating your clairvoyance.
Mm, very interesting. All right, and okay, so thank you for explaining that to me. I wasn't sure that people in our audience really know a whole lot about it, and I know more now than I did too, so thank you. You know, on this program, Nancy, we're trying to point out to people how important human emotions are, and in my understanding, they influence and are part of everything, but in reading your book, I realized that I seldom have thought that aliens also have emotions. And one of the things that touched me when I read How to Talk to an Alien was that some of the aliens seem to convey that they were frightened largely of humans and also of being stopped from returning to their own homes and loved ones. Talk to me a little bit about this, will you?
Those reports mostly come to us from, a retired sergeant, Clifford Stone.
Mm-hmm.
And he claims that he had a job category known as being an interfacer. And his job was sort of to show up when he wasn't doing his regular duties in the military, to show up at UFO crash retrieval sites to not to be picking up the debris, but to be interfacing or communicating with any entities or beings who happen to be on board those craft. And from my research, it and certainly what he's stated, it appears that there have been quite a few crashes and that there have been an awful lot of dead aliens, but there have been some who have survived. They were actually given labels, allegedly, by our government, so that, you know, was one of the more famous ones were EBE, one and two and so on. And then if they, some of them were so badly injured that they ended up dying. But of those who stayed, apparently they were mostly kept in very intense captivity. And he said that when he would go to communicate with them, they would initiate the telepathic dialogue, that he could hear their voice outside his ear, in other words, with his ears, and also with his mind. So it was telepathic, but felt physical, like it was a physical airwave. And that they did. They talked apparently about being very frightened, and not being able to see their families, not being able to go back to their home planets, wherever they were, and that he, even when he speaks about them in retrospect, he seems to tear up. He's obviously he's very empathic and very intuitive. That's I'm sure how he got that job to start with, and apparently he had contact or abduction experiences as a very young kid that continued through his life. And apparently, according to him, the aliens pick you for the job of interfacer. You don't get to apply for the job. They pick you. And then my impression is that they let whoever in the military or government know who they want, and you get selected that way.
Interesting. We had, you probably know, oh gosh, Pia, and they communicate with Larkma from the Pleiades. And we had them on our show, Pia and Cullen. And it was very, very interesting because apparently they got picked also. Now one of the things that, that you know, our media tends to sensationalize aliens and sort of instill fear in us. But a lot of people talk about dark and malevolent aliens and also lighter and benevolent aliens. Do you subscribe to the notion that there are some that are negatively focused and some more positively focused?
Since I came out of the, I came at this through the psychic world and then the paranormal world, and I know in the paranormal world where you're dealing with not just entities or spirits of deceased humans, but you're also dealing with non-human entities, that there are certainly negative and positive. And I had, on a religious level, I got raised Protestant. And I never believed in the devil or demons. I thought that was ridiculous. However, having explored some of these more spirit-oriented worlds now, they do exist. I'm convinced of that. I mean, I've watched it operate. You know, I interviewed at one point the top exorcist for the Vatican. So if you're talking about, as you are in the, I believe, in the alien world, you're talking about not just physical entities, you're talking about shapeshifters, you're talking about tricksters, you're talking about spiritual types of entities, some good, some bad. And I think that there's a crossover from the paranormal world, also in the alien world. There's good and bad. And the same way, if you go back into almost any religious writings, there's always a battle between higher entities, some of them within the same entity of good and evil. So they're out there. And I think that's why, if you're going to communicate, be very careful. Don't just leave yourself wide open, because that's like walking in, you know, with a Ouija board in your hand. Don't do it.
All right. That's a great answer. Thank you. So you report that we sent out a broadcast, something like Morse code, that was created by Frank Drake and Carl Sagan in 1974. And you were talking about the fact that we tend to look for the kinds of responses we think ought to be coming back, and yet what does come back, we might not expect. For example, you said you think the answer came back in 2001 when two new crop circles appeared in Hampshire, England. And that opens the whole issue of what forms have aliens used to attempt to communicate with us that we may have heard of?
Well, you mean what forms in the physical world, or what forms in terms of human appearances?
Yes.
Yikes. Okay. You know, if you read some of the works of, you know, these well-respected ufologists, and in particular, I would say Jacques Vallée and Jean Kiel, and they really talk about, with, I think, a great deal of frustration, they talk about the fact that what is being produced for us may be nothing but this sort of grand illusion. In the same way that I think that there are entities who are quite capable of shape-shifting, in the same way that you have, you know, a parallel in the paranormal world where, say, a negative entity will show up as this sweet little girl dead spirit, and you're communicating with a little girl, oh, I feel so bad for you, you know, it must be so cold and lonely there. And then you realize at a certain point that you've been played. And I think that there are, you know, the god Hermes was brought us language, according to the myth, but he was also a trickster. We may not be aware of why we are being moved and manipulated in particular ways, or made to understand that aliens are communicating a particular way. They have, I think, very, very intense powers of mind control and mind manipulation. They can manipulate, probably electromagnetically, our actual five senses and our ability to perceive. So I don't know that we can always trust everything that we are, you know, thinking, hearing, seeing, and perceiving in relation to alien presence or alien communication.
Thank you. There are a couple of other things that I want to explore. One is that some aliens have been reported to be able to speak particular languages, and sometimes they speak in perfect let's use English, for example. It's just an example. They may be able to speak perfect English. They may be able to speak archaic English. And they may be able to speak English with an accent or without an accent. And that may have something to do with how they learned, how they discovered our language.
Yeah, and that's sort of the, that's the point of what I'm writing about here, which is, you know, if the rest of the world is going around trying to collect little bits of crash site debris or take photos of lights in the sky on a black background, you know, there's only so much of that you can get. And then you're kind of stuck at a level of trying to understand aliens. If you look at it from the point of view of language, which is what I'm doing in How to Talk to an Alien, you are opening up a different, it's like a different line of examination that will lead you on new pathways of understanding about them. So if you, for example, and this is what I point out in there, There are, and you're absolutely correct, they speak many, many languages, ranging from really obscure languages like Finnish, the language of Finland, to, you know, in the W56 friendship case, they were speaking obviously Italian, but also French, German, Spanish. They're all over the place. You have cases coming out of South America where they are speaking obviously different types of Spanish and Portuguese, but they're speaking them with different accents. Well, accents are a huge clue. And when I have done some presentations, I'm a little bit too shy, but I think I might start doing this. If I start out before anybody's heard my voice and I step out onto a stage and I say, thank you all for coming today. I'm most appreciative of that. And I would just love to talk to you about the aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would talk a bit like this, and I would talk perhaps with a different accent. And then I would say, you know, and I can go on and on and on, or talk like I'm, you know, somewhere from over here on the East Coast. But the whole point is that each time I'm saying something, immediately I'm sure, not that my accents are wonderful, but somewhere in your mind, you're targeting a location for me.
That's true.
And same goes with aliens. And then you got to figure out, well, okay, is that native speech? Or is that acquired speech? If it's acquired, how do I know that it's acquired? Did they learn Spanish in Colombia? Or did they learn Spanish in Spain? Because there's a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody who learns English in India is going to sound quite different from somebody who speaks it over here. So it tells you something about the aliens. And they do speak with accents, all different types of accents. So you get an idea of whether they've spent a lot of time here on Earth, whether they have really been communicating with native speakers like humans, or whether they probably just learned it and they don't even know, you know, common phrases. What was interesting in the W56 case is that actually one of my favorite stories was that one of the aliens spoke with the same accent as the Italian fascist leader, Mussolini. The reason why he spoke, and I imagine that it was something sharp and spoke probably a little bit like this, but something from that period of time in the early 20th century, because the way he learned how to speak Italian was listening to old radio clips of Mussolini. So you learn something about them. You get a little further than just the photos in the sky and the crash site debris.
Right. Now, another fairly sizable section of your book that is fascinating is you examining samples of either of alien writing that came directly from aliens or that has been channeled, and comparing and contrasting it with different with the writing of different languages, including early languages, here on the Earth, and showing the similarities. I believe there were three different types of written language. So there are written languages. It's another way we could communicate if we could but understand or translate. Correct?
Right. And what I'm trying to do is to show that if we cross-compare different samples of writing, and you could do the same thing with speech, it's a little harder to come by. Different samples of writing, things, and there are three ways to collect writing. You can get actual alien artifacts. That's pretty tough to get, and most of them have been snapped up by the military anyway. But there are some around, and I do show one in the book. The second way to get written material from aliens would be from recollections, memories of abductions and contact experience. So it's a memory thing, and people will write down what they remember seeing. And then the third way is that you get channeled impressions. And most people tend not to trust those because they're too subjective. you know, maybe they're just the crazy ramblings of a crazy person or the psychic ramblings of a psychic person. And if you don't believe in psychic, oh, well. So that's a whole group. And, you know, dream language, automatic writing, channeled communications, those all get heavily discounted. And I have read, there's a classic book called From India to Mars, I believe, where a Swiss psychiatrist was examining a French medium. She claimed she'd been to Mars and that she knew the language and she did writing. And he examined her Martian writing and decided that because it was so similar syntactically to French, it couldn't possibly be alien, and she was making up the whole thing. But my point here is, if you, and what I have done, if you cross-compare, for example, what she did with what the world's most famous 16th century mathematician did in terms of an angelic language and alphabet, you find many, many identical alphabetic characters. That's how you start to make the correspondence, not by knocking out one person because you say, oh, they have to be crazy.
So, you know, it sounds, it makes sense to me when I think about it, that if we're all one, or if we share the same field of all possibilities, then of course we would have similarities, would we not?
I think that that's inevitable. And I think from, I have been able to make some pretty interesting stylistic correlations to start with between some ancient languages, like the language of Gaius, which was developed around, I think it was 900 BC. Or you take some of the Sumerian cuneiform glyphs. You take some of the South, what's it called? South Arabian characters, okay? You take Native American writing from the 17th century. I mean, across the board, you start comparing them to current channeled alien writing, and they bear many, many similarities. And what I have suggested is that if, let's assume that they have been visiting us for centuries or thousands of years, and they come, they go, they come, they go. Well, languages evolve through separation in space and time. So they may share common roots, but they may not look identical. They may have similarities. Or in just the same way, you know, I lived in France and Germany. I also lived in England. And I remember being shocked as a kid in England. I thought we all spoke English. And the fact is that we don't. You know, we don't have lorries or flats or, you know, things like that. We've got trucks and apartments. So I do think that that may be further evidence of a linguistic type of evidence that they've been here and that they have either given us language or shared language with us and then removed themselves and have come back at various points.
Now, here on the Earth, we are going through a profound transition. And a lot of people report that alien visits have increased, that some aliens are coming to help us make the changes. Maybe some are coming to take advantage. I don't know. What's your understanding? Have you learned any? Are we having more visits? And do you know anything about the motivation of such visits?
Certainly more visits are being reported. It's kind of like the old problem of, is there more police brutality or we just have more video cameras? You know, so I don't know. There's certainly more people reporting it. There's more acceptance of it. You've got literally 48% of America that believes that the presence of UFOs is indicative of an alien presence.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of what they're doing here, I have spoken to a lot of people in the military and other people, and you get stories kind of disturbingly all across the board. There was one fellow who basically said that the alien, he said that there, I think, were 11 different alien species, and only two of them are benevolent. And he said that the evil alien plan is to wipe out all of humanity, I think it was by 2029.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that sort of tossed out there as a sort of sickening possibility. Then you have all of these other wonderful encounters. I mean, just truly magnificent encounters where they seem to be, the aliens seem to be working hard at getting us to elevate our ability to get along with each other and get along with them,
mm-hmm.
To understand what interconnectedness is all about, love, being good stewards of the planet, because that involves not just us, but not just our human race, but them, and that they're there to help us. Other people have said that they're some are here just simply to do trade. They're trading
mm-hmm.
Minerals, and if you look at the number of reports where they use words relating to minerals, including the NSA decryption of alien messages, where apparently they're putting together the equivalent of a periodic table communicating to us about different types of rare earth metals. Well, why? I mean,
mm-hmm.
maybe our planet is just kind of loaded with whatever it is that they need. I think they're here for a wide variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow, that... Oh, there's so much in all of this. And one of the reasons I wanted to feature your appearance at the beginning of the year is we're doing new beginnings and writing our resolutions and so forth. And I thought, if we're going to be thinking of new things, why don't we think wider about what's going on? So when I learned of your availability to appear on Full Power Living, I really jumped at the chance to talk with you.
Thank you.
So, yeah. So I really appreciate your meticulous investigation and reporting. And your book, as I'm sure people can tell from our conversation today, How to Talk to an Alien, brings up a lot of great points that helps us to open to the possibilities of experiencing and communicating with life from other places besides the surface of our Earth. And I want to remind you who are listening that Nancy and her work can be found on the web at theskepticalpsychic.com and at talkalien.com. So, Nancy, thank you so much for your time and your meticulous work and your groundedness, which really comes across, and for being here with us on Full Power Living today.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Eileen.
All right. So join us live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, that's noon Eastern, for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. And next week, come explore with me how writing your book in as little as 3 days can bring you closer to your true nature and purpose and bring you closer to God. I'll be talking with Tom Bird on January the 14th at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. Please join me for that show. Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media and I have been co-producing this show, so thank you for being my mentor, Paul. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
To Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.